2015, right?
15,
so
yes.
This is a bear market.
This is very bear market.
How much money did they provide?
At first, it's $20 million.
So they gave you $20 million and they said, okay, you can start, do whatever you want.
Yes.
What do you do with the $20
million? I just buy Bitcoin.
James Bowe, the founder of $1.5 billion digital finance group and J Square.
He is an early investor in many companies and projects, including Circle, Ledger,
Pudgy Penguins, and Polkadot,
in which he proudly owns more than 1% of the total supply.
So you discover Bitcoin, you're 21 years old, you think, oh man, this is solving one of the biggest problems that we have in China, which is money printing.
When more people realize the Bitcoin could be a potential solution, then the Bitcoin value goes up. If we want our business to become big, industry has to become big, then we have to do more adoption. Besides Bitcoin, it's NFT. So NFT still have a lot of value, right?
You invested $20 million in 2015. How much was it at the peak of 2017?
It was definitely more than $100 million.
What's your framework for investing in early stage crypto projects?
It's super hard to manage more than 100 portfolios. I feel like if I have to gain profit, which potentially can move the needle, I have to own a certain percentage of the network. When I was roughly 10, my father randomly pointed out a building and asked me, can you tell me the value of that building? So I tried to learn the skill about why this building was that much money. That's probably the first thing I learned about evaluating one thing.
Whatever amount you have, it could be $1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 or 20 million. When you really understand Bitcoin, you want more Bitcoin. That's when you start to make mistakes. What are some of your biggest f-ups in the last 9 years in crypto?
Yeah, I think that's a big f-up, right? I go to DevConnect in Turkey. So
that's when is that?
November, second week of November. So we host some event there. So it's a big Eastern conference, I guess.
Okay. Do you travel a lot for conferences?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Do you like to travel?
Yeah.
What do you like the most about traveling?
Traveling, I think the conference itself is very, useful because you're meeting a lot of portfolios, meeting a lot of new projects. And you meet all these kind of people with different ideas. That's super helpful and actually bring you a lot of thinking about what is the industry going in the future. This is actually very important to us.
When you travel, do you mainly spend your time in conferences or do you spend some time learning about the culture and doing some other stuff that are not crypto related?
I think I would probably do both. If I have time, I would love to do both because conference itself is important, usually takes about a week. Then I go to the conference, meeting everyone, talk to them, and that's useful. But on the other hand, usually, if a conference holding in a certain country, this certain country have a certain policy, whether that's probably not too negative toward the cryptocurrency, right? Sometimes, in some country, they are actually very positive policy toward the cryptocurrency. Then we're thinking deeply about, okay, is this a country with a large population with great kind of buying power in the future, then I think about this in a more jurisdiction perspective. Is that going to be a good project, in that certain country? Mm-hmm. And that actually helped me a lot because, sometimes, we are talking about the globalization, right? But we are talking about decentralization. But sometimes the reality in crypto is, if you are based in a certain country, you are doing the same thing with other project, you're actually doing better in this country because you are localized. You know how to make things work in that country. So that is actually, something we need to take into consideration when we make the investment. If the market in this area is big enough and the project dominate the market here, that could be a good investment for us.
How can you know that if you're not from the country itself? Because you're from China, right?
Right.
Let's say you're going to Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea what the Turkish market is like.
Absolutely, that's right. So that's a great question. So I because I'm not from Turkey, I'm not from, the other country, usually I would actually do is trying to ask other people to help us. For some certain country, we have people there, right? So we actually have people in New York, in Hong Kong, in Singapore, in Shanghai, in other places as well. We're actually trying to hire a new guy in India, another guy in Japan. So we're trying to hire some, people there to help us do the deal sourcing and help us analyze whether that's a good deal or not. That's one way. The other is, you know, previously I may work with some partners or invest into some projects based in that country. I was seeking for their advice, see whether this is a good project or not.
How do you find the right people? Because you don't know anything about the country and you don't know anything about the people. I mean, maybe someone you know knows them, but like, how do you maximize the chances of hitting right the first time when you hire someone who is going to be responsible for making investment decision in a country that you have no idea about?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. I think track record is very important. We try to hire more experienced guy. If you are new to crypto, you don't have any track record, right? So this is very hard to analyze whether you are good or not. I think that's very risky. So we want to hire the guy who have at least probably 1 to 2 year experience in crypto. And the track record already proved that, okay, you can find, you know, good project, you have experience there, then I believe in the future you can bring good deals to us. So, you know, this is, I think, important to us.
Regarding the events, because you say like you travel to go to quite a few events every year, how do you approach these events? Because as we talked about before, and kind of like probably everyone who's been to one of these huge events, these thousands of people,
right?
It's very easy to go there and actually get zero value out of it,
right?
Because you're just lost in the middle of all these people and you just don't even know where to start.
Absolutely. I think, you know, if you're talking about conference or event, there are actually two types of different conference. The first is more like commercialized conference. You know, they have good speaker. Actually, the size of the conference are very big, but they're trying to sell their sponsorship at a very high price. They try to sell the ticket at a very high price. For this type of conference, you know, it's more about building the brand awareness, because you have a lot of people attending conference. You try to spread your brand and there and talk to people about you yourself. That's going to be useful. But actually, this is not the builders conference. The second conference type of conference is actually builders conference. It's more like the conference are not that much people, but you have a lot of real builders there, which usually combine with a different type of hackathon. You know, there's a lot of hackathon in that conference. And to be honest, in most circumstances, you know, the second type of the conference actually hold by the layer one foundations. You know, either it's Ethereum or Web3 foundations or Solana foundation or Tendermint or whatever. You know, usually that type of conference are more about builders conference. So the purpose about us to go into that conference is more about finding a good project and invest them.
Before we dive deeper into this podcast, can you tell me more about yourself? Who are you?
Sure.
What's your background? Where did you grow up? And how was your childhood like?
Sure. So I'm studying right now. So I was born in Shanghai. So my family background actually, you know, very traditional. You know, my parents, they operating all kind of business in the financial sector in China.
So investment businesses.
Investment business, most like a private equity business. And they all do different kind of investment, but more traditional. So when I was very young, I actually start to learn different skills, knowledge about how to make investment. Of course, I'm too young to make the right decision, but I get a sense about, you know, how to maximize our return, but also try to make sure the risk is within your expectation.
So they were kind of actively pushing you to start to invest from early on, or is because you had like this interest yourself and said, hey, I know you're doing that. I'm interested into that too. I want to try.
I don't think they push me to do that. First, I'm interested in learning more about the knowledge. The second is my parents always talk about these things at home. So I hear about everything about how to evaluate the asset, right? So Yeah, that's the, you know, the background. So, but I'm very interested in see how, you know, I can do very well in the future. So that's also the motivation for me to finding cryptos and dig into it and finding the value of it.
I think, how old were you when you did your first investment?
When I was roughly 10, you know, my father asked me a question about, you know, can you tell me, you know, he just randomly point out a building and just asked me, can you tell me the value of that building? So I tried to learn the skill about, you know, giving the answer and why, you know, this building should worth that much money. So that's probably the first thing I learned about, you know, evaluating one thing. About the first investment.
What happened that day? Did you say something that was completely off or?
Yeah, I think close, within probably, I mean, it's not exactly the right number. It's probably, I mean, it could be somewhere like around that. So if the building is $300 million, let's say, I probably say somewhere like $250.
Okay.
So it's not that close, but it's close.
How did your dad react?
It is more like about I analyze, you know, because the building in a few blocks away, still at this price, and this one compared to that one is bigger, small, modern or not. Mm. And, you know, then I can analyze how the value of the building.
So how did your dad react?
Sorry?
He was proud? Your dad, how did you react? Was he proud or was he just like, this is my boy, like, I expect you to be right at 10 years old about a building valuation?
He's saying like he cannot do this thing when he was 10 years old.
Okay.
But that's a different story because I was born in this, you know, family.
Environment.
Yeah, but he just don't have the condition about doing that. So that's totally fair. But his reaction is pretty positive to me, I guess. So then afterwards, I start doing investment into stock, gold, back to high school. And
for fun?
For fun, just a small amount of money. And actually, my parent lent the money to me. So I just doing a little bit.
They lent you money or they gave you money to be like, this is your trial and you do whatever you want?
I return all the money back. Okay. So it's more about borrow the money. They lend it to me. And then I just keep the profit. It's really small number, but, you know, they just, you know, give all the profit to me, which I think, you know, very good. At least for students, that's not
so
that
you
small.
You managed,
right?
Not to lose the money.
I'm not losing the money. I again some profit, but not too much.
Do you think it's luck at that age, or do you think there was already something else?
For sure, that's half luck, half skills. I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
How much do you think it would be today, being very transparent and be very honest with yourself?
Mm-hmm.
How much of your success is luck, and how much is skills? Versus this 50-50
right.
Back then.
Right. I think probably still somewhere like one third of it is still luck.
One third.
Yeah. Just imagine if I didn't notice Bitcoin from my schoolmate when I started in my undergraduate degree, then I won't enter into the crypto industry.
So you're at high school, you do stock trading, right?
Yeah.
Your parents lend you some money, you kind of return some money. What do you do after that?
I graduate from high school, then I go to college.
What did you study in college?
Mathematics.
Math, okay.
It's pretty hard. And yeah.
Why did you study math? Did you want that? Or is it like something that's pushed in China? Because to be able to be seen as a brilliant student, you have to have been able to have great grades in a math or mathematical subject?
I think for a few reasons. For the first is my parents, they both study mathematics. So that's probably one reason. And the others, I'm actually interested in learning more about math. So I think this could be related to the financial industry in the future, like quant trading and other stuff. So I think this is important. I have interest in choose mathematics as my undergraduate degree. And no offensive, but the other degree is not kind of suitable for me. So if I learning about other degree like Chinese or English, I'm not interested in learning that. Just, yeah.
So you don't really like languages?
I'm okay about studying language, but I don't have a lot of, you know, enjoy, you know, I don't enjoy learning it.
How was the journey with English?
English was good. Because I studied in Columbia University for the master's degree, it actually pushed me a lot to about talking to people in English. This is a very good experience.
So you did undergrad in China?
In China,
in Shanghai?
Yes.
In math? And then you went to Columbia?
Right.
For master's or?
Yeah, for the master's for 1.5 years. In the August of 2015, I go to New York, study statistics in Columbia University for 1.5 year.
Why Columbia?
Because I think it is a good school. I think the other thing is if I study for a master's degree in China, it's way too long. I think it's for 3 years. All the master's degree have 3 years, you know, time for the Chinese college. It's too long for me. I think I feel very motivated at trying to start a new business.
To do something.
Yes. And I want to see what's happening outside. So I go to US.
I have a very similar experience. I wanted to start a business right after my bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
My daddy wanted me to do a master because he thought that in case things would not go well for me, I would have a master.
Right.
So I choose the only, there was two or three masters in Europe where it was only 1 year. Actually, it was 11 months
right.
or 10 months instead of 2 years. And I went for one of these and then started a business right after.
Right. Good story.
It's, I don't know. It's just, it made much more sense to me. I was like, okay, it's going to be a 10-month master. So I'll do it. And I'll choose a cool place in Spain. So I have like a really cool master. And then the second year of the master, which I'm not doing, can you help me for the first year by giving me some money so I can fund my life while I'm building my company? And I was really lucky that they did it. And it's actually probably the best investment they ever made in me, much mm-hmm. better than any school year or master or bachelor.
Right.
Because it gave me this... This basis that I could start a business off.
That's a good story.
I have many other great stories, but we're here for you today. Not for me.
No, but amazing story again. I think you do very good business.
So, and this is not the business. The business is actually data analytics, uh-huh. nothing to do with crypto.
I see.
But anyway, we don't care about me. We're here for you. So you do a year and a half in Colombia.
Right.
Right. And then back to Shanghai.
Back to Shanghai, yes.
What for? So you said in Colombia, actually, you discovered Bitcoin.
No, when I started in mathematics in Fudan University, I discovered Bitcoin from my schoolmate.
So during your undergrad?
Undergraduate school.
All right.
2013.
So 2013?
Yeah, 2013, yes.
So how did you discover that? And what did you do back then?
Yeah, we just talk. I mean, it's just like you know, schoolmate. We know each other for a while, right? We just talk about what's the update, what's you're up to, and then one of my schoolmate told me about Bitcoin, and at first I just you know it's a new thing to me, right? So, and I would love to learn. Then I just take a look and see what's going on there. At first I didn't see anything like behind it, but. By digging into further and read a white paper and try to find some book in the bookstores about Bitcoins, then I really spending probably a few months about reading that materials. Then I start to learn this is actually a very good innovation. So I start to buy Bitcoin back to 2014.
So that's 9 years ago. So you're 21 years old.
Yes.
How at 21 years old do you realize that Bitcoin is an innovation?
It is actually, I think at first I just think Bitcoin solved the problem of the traditional financial system, right? Because I have a few trading experience, about investment experience in the high school. And I also, my parents told me a lot about, you know, what's going on, what's the problem of the financial system right now.
What was it?
It was like, first it's high inflation, mm-hmm. right? It's high inflation. And the M2 in China at that time is like probably 15 or 14% a year. Basically, you're printing 14 or 15% a year, more money in a year. That's crazy number, right?
Even during a non-crisis period, China was printing that much money every year.
Yeah, you can see the growth of the GDP, that's true. But on the other hand, you print way more money, right? So actually, they stabilize the price for the food because all the people need to eat and drink, right? But all the price of the asset, it goes up crazily. But this is unhealthy in the long term. So I'm thinking about, you know, for this problem, and I compared this to the solution potentially Bitcoin provide. It's actually a perfect solution for solving the problem for the decentralized systems with reasonable inflations, and no one can change the rules. And that's a great innovation.
What percentage of Chinese people do you think today understand or even back then understood what was going on?
I don't think most people understand, because
that, you know, outside of China, a lot of people see China as like an amazing success story,
right,
in terms of how it grew that fast, right?
Right.
But there is obviously a flip side or something that's not talked about, which is exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
How do you finance this growth?
Right. I think for first questions, I don't think most people understand it, because unless you have a very good financial background, you won't understand the logic behind it, right? So you only care about actually, you know, whether you can buy enough food, buy enough drink, live very well, which you can do. But what they are missing is all the fiat they get actually getting, you know, diluted every year, right? You cannot afford to buy good asset. That's a problem, but most people cannot realize that.
So you discover Bitcoin, you think you're 21 years old, you think, oh man, this is solving one of the biggest problems that we have in China, which is money printing.
Yeah, potentially in the world, I guess.
Exactly, but you're 21, so you're probably not thinking, there's already this problem in your country, right? So you're like, oh man, like, so what do?
I just buy Bitcoin. I think this is a great innovation. It could be a good investment when more people realize the problem, more realize and the Bitcoin could be a potential solution, then the Bitcoin value will go up.
You'd buy with your own money, or you're already like, what are you doing? Are you already considering building a fund or a business, or are you just saying, oh man, I'm just going to buy this thing and like see where it goes?
Yeah, I just buy some Bitcoins at first with my own money. You know, I get some profit from the previous trading. And I actually talked to my parents about this, and they actually started supporting me. So then I have an idea about, you know, can I start a small investment firm, which is separate from the company my parents own, which specifically invests into Bitcoin and other businesses building around it. So my family actually did supporting me after I graduated from school in Shanghai. That was actually in 2015.
So they told you, okay, here is some money that you can invest for the family into growing a fund.
Yeah, they
in
think
crypto, because we don't understand it, but we trust you.
Yeah, that's right. They think that what they say to me is, okay, we can share all the, you know, profit. Basically, you can get a piece of the equity of the company. We can get a piece, but we provide the money. You're doing it.
How much money did they provide?
At first, it's $20 million.
So they gave you $20 million, and they said, okay, you can start, do whatever you want.
Yes.
What do you do with the $20 million? You're 22 years old?
Yeah, I just...
You receive $20 million, like, why do you do that? Especially in 2014, 15, the liquidity was not the same as now.
Absolutely. Right? But for Bitcoin, it's fine. Because at that time, you know, there's no trading fees initially. So liquidity for trading Bitcoin is actually super good. And I think if you buy $20 million of Bitcoin at that time, it's still, you know, it's very feasible in a day. So I just use spending the most of the money to buy Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.
Yeah, Bitcoin. Because there's no other currency at the time. There's Litecoins, but there's not a big difference about Bitcoin. I still think Bitcoin has the value, so I just buy Bitcoin.
2015, right?
15,
so this is bear market.
This is very bear market. Bitcoin price is somewhere like around $150 to $300.
How did you keep conviction until the next bull market, which happened in 2017?
I actually don't know when the bull market will come, But I think, you know, since I have the money, it doesn't seem expensive right now. I just buy it.
But concretely, like I'm trying to like think very practically concretely. If you say my main thesis is buying Bitcoin, I have 20 million, I'm going to buy Bitcoin. And then Bitcoin obviously doesn't go up directly. It goes sideways, maybe down.
Right.
It takes a lot of time.
Right.
What did you do all this time with your day and your life? And how did you, because your parents, they trust you, but they don't understand the thing. And it's last, you know, after 1-2 years, like, what's going on here? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did they really still trust you after 2 years? Or were you like, okay, what are you doing? Like, what's your day looking like or your week looking like when you're in a bear market and all you do is putting a chunk of money in Bitcoin and waiting?
Yeah, I think first I think for there's not too, I mean, I do have some pressure, but not too many pressure from the parents about I have to gain so many profit, you know, based on the money you give me. More about I want to prove myself, right? But I don't have that much pressure about my parents directly give me that you have to gain profit in the short term. Mm-hmm. So that's not the case. So since I don't need to have a deadline about, you know, I need to create a lot of return on that, I think it gives me actually more room about waiting and see what's going on here. So, and luckily in 2016, already the market start to go up. So I don't, it's very lucky for me to enter into Bitcoin back to 2015. If I start this firm and talk to my parents back to 2013, it's actually more risky because I will see 2 years of the bear market and give me a lot of pressure. And then I can still hold in that, but
well,
I will be
justified. Yeah.
Yeah. It will be a different story. Yeah.
How many early mistakes did you do? Because whatever amount you have, it could be $1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 or 20 million. When you really understand Bitcoin, you want more Bitcoin.
Absolutely.
There's never enough of it, right?
Right.
So that's when you start to make mistakes because you say, how do I make more Bitcoin with my Bitcoin?
Right. So I think if I keep holding that much of Bitcoin, I think that were probably worth more right now. So then I go to Columbia to study a master's degree and start to see, you know, I understand there's secondary market here, right? There's primary market. I want to take a look and see what kind of business we have in the crypto industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to West Coast a lot. You know, most of the business at that time are based in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
So I talked to people there, and that was 2020, more like 2016 and 20, you know, early 2017 maybe. So I talked to a lot of business there and see whether I can make a few investments, not just holding the Bitcoin as secondary market, but, you know, whether I can invest the business in the primary market, which can potentially outperform the Bitcoin. Which turns out it's not a case, but you know, at that time, I have no idea.
The equity business didn't outperform.
Yeah, which one's better. So
buying and holding Bitcoin was better strategy.
Yeah, for 99% of people, that's the true story. I talked to the business there, do a couple of investments at that time. You know, I think they are good investment, but compared to Bitcoin, they give me less return. But it actually educated me a lot about how to, you know, because all my background before is more about secondary market. Right, a trading stock, gold, Bitcoins, but I never know how the primary market work. So in 2016, when I'm doing these kind of primary market investment, I start to understand how, you know, the VC works. That was actually last for probably 2 years, 2016 and 2017. And another big mistake I made is in 2017, there are so many token sale at that time called ICO. I don't understand the model and the value of it. I think whether, you know, you are the same project, you do the crowdfunding, then suddenly your token have value. I really don't understand the logic about it. And I don't understand the value about why we need these tokens, right?
But you still invested?
No, actually we invest the most of the investment I'm investing in the primary market are actually equity deals. So investing to exchange, other business infrastructures, more like traditional business, but I don't make any token investment at the time. That was a very big mistake for me. If I invest in ICO, I probably get another return in 2017.
Okay, so you're saying the mistake was not investing in those?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people being very rich about investing into these ICOs.
So mostly a Bitcoin holder for 2017,
right?
Bull cycle.
Yeah, but I have to sell some Bitcoin for the investment in the primary market.
What happened afterwards?
After that, it goes to bear market again. It was pretty bad actually. You know I'm able to actually manage some risk when the market is super crazy in by the end of 2017. Actually, de-risk a little bit, holding a bunch of cash. I think because I have no idea how Bitcoin will be, you know, in the future, what's the price. But I have one idea about how to manage my risk. I have to, you know, de-risk a little bit. That's the idea I start to thinking about based on the previous experience about trading stock and the gold. So that's pretty good. I de-risk a little bit, sell some Bitcoins. But primary market, as I can never sell it, right? I just holding these equities, holding some of the Bitcoins and holding a lot of cash, you know, in 2018 and 2019. That was actually the most, I think, right decision I have ever made. If I don't de-risk my position at you know, 2017 at the peak, it will be a tough 2 years for me because I don't have cash. I have to, maybe I can also borrow again or ask my father, parents to give me more money. That's feasible, but that's a different story. That's going to be a different story.
So how much you invested 20 million in 2015? How much was it at the peak of 2017?
It was definitely more than 100 mil, but okay. I can't remember the detailed number. Yeah, it's definitely more than 100 mil.
So then you basically realize, oh man, I kind of missed out on these ICOs during this following bear market, but I have cash.
Yes.
So you probably don't want to make the same mistake another time.
Absolutely. That's how I start, you know, make the right decision about investing to layer one protocols. But a lot of projects actually finished already the fundraising in 2017. But, you know, there's potentially, you know, I learned that there's primary market, secondary market, but there's OTC market, right? Mm. Somewhere between like a primary market and the secondary market. So there's some people trying to sell some of the asset. I think one thing I dig into very further is the mistake I made in 2017 about the tokens. I learned, you know, at 2017, I didn't hold any Ether. So, but Ether goes crazy. Like at the peak is the value of Ether is probably 2/3 of the value of Bitcoin. Mm. That's crazy, right? So I dig into why Ether was that much money, why other token was that much money. So I decided to shift the focus about, I don't need to invest too many into equity. I need to invest into a lot of tokens. That was a very good decision actually. So I started to understand the value of it. I think because of policy, I see actually that, but I think the tokens still have value. There will be other ways about the token to come out, get listed, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. So I invest into tokens. So the good decision for me on the OTC market is I buy DOT, Solana, and Near, these three projects. Right.
How much was Sol?
Actually, if the valuation let me break it down. Valuation for DOT is somewhere like $700 million to $800 million. Mm-hmm. Solana is actually cheaper. Solana is probably 300 mil or something like that. Mm. Near is even cheaper. Yeah. So that was actually a very good deal for us, for my firm, basically.
How did you size these bets? Because you still realize, oh man, it's much more risky, right?
Yes. But I feel like if I have to, you know, gain profit, which potentially can move the needle, I have to own a certain percentage of the network. Probably, let's say 1-3% or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. You know, I need a certain percentage. I actually set up the goal is 1-3%. So I actually trying to buy, but DOT actually definitely more than 1%. And Solana is almost 1%.
So you're earning more than 1% of DOT.
Definitely
1% of Solana.
Yeah, I'm still only more than 1% of DOT right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Solana no. Solana definitely no. So actually that's the goal I set up, and I decided to doing that. That was actually the a few most important investment in my investment career, I would say. That was the layer one protocol investment. And then in 2020, then the market started to was pretty well. So I decide to kind of, that's DeFi summer, right? Mm-hmm. I do some allocating part of my money into DeFi monies. Sometimes you lose a little bit, but in most time you gain a lot of profit, which is great. Luckily, it's still profitable for the DeFi summer, but
Were you doing these investments yourself, or you had a team that were kind of DeFi degens specialists doing that for you? Because there's a lot of risks that are involved when you start to play with all these DeFi stuff, hacks and all that stuff.
Right. To be honest, I only have one guy.
Okay.
Who's pretty decent in DeFi degens, but not top tier, but okay. But he's very tired about monitoring this to me probably 24 multiple 7 at that time. So
yeah,
it is, I don't know how he can do that, but that's probably everyone too at a DeFi summer. It's monitoring everything super closely. So we get some profit, but not that enough. Not big enough. But the more important thing is Polkadot and Solana get listed on the market.
Mm.
But I make pretty good decision about DOT because I'm more familiar with DOT. I know a lot of people there in Paris, in Web3 foundations, because of the relationship. I make the investment and start to talk to people there, I make more deep relationship. I don't know a lot of people in the Solana Foundation. And so when I get listed, actually, I holding DOT and I sell all my Solana. And probably less than $3, which
you sold him,
which is a crazy bad decision.
And because you almost made 100x from there.
Yeah, you can still make 100x, if not probably at least 50x from there.
A crypto classic.
Yeah, but luckily I made the right decision about DOT. Right? I holding on the DOT until the peak. So that was actually the main return and profit for my entire firm.
This is
2020. Polkadot have a pretty good performance. Actually ranked number 3 on the market. It goes to like $50.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that was a very, very good time for me. And simultaneously, I think we need to have this is the main investment, which is great, but I need to make more investment in the permanent market, start an investment team, which I started to building more about a team. We have probably potentially 6-7 people potentially on the investment side,
mm-hmm.
and invest into different projects. So we invest into Polkadot ecosystem a lot. We invest otherwise in the infrastructure a lot. We think this kind of deal also make a lot of sense. We basically invest all the project in the Polkadot ecosystem. On the other hand, we invest into a lot of core infrastructure, active deals like CoinList, Republic, ChainSafe, FE Bank, all these kind of licensed DeFi business as well. Mm-hmm. I think that also have value because you need more mainstream capital coming into place, and this is the infrastructure. So these are actually the two type of investment we do. Of course, we invest into other, token deals outside Polkadot ecosystem a little bit as well. So it become very heavy, actually invest more than 100 different projects so far.
I believe you invested in Pudgy Penguins.
Pudgy Penguins last year? Last year. That's
the equity.
Okay, but that's more like a later story, yeah.
Why? Because Luca said he was on the podcast 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And he said that I think he went to 100 plus VCs who said no. What right. did you see that the other VCs didn't see?
I feel like, you know, first of all, in at the time I did the investment in Peggy Penguins, it's actually super bear market for NFT. No one believed in that. But I think this could be a good opportunity for the investor to actually buy NFT. While on the second market, or invest into the firm, which have great potential. Because you have nothing to lose, right? The trading volume of OpenSea goes down 97%. It's super bear market. It's only about one thing, whether you believe in NFTs do have a bright future or not. If you think NFT dead, completely dead, then you just stop making an investment related with it, right? But I think, you know, NFT is a good way for us to do massive adoption, you know.
Probably one of the best.
Yes, because my friend outside the crypto industry will ask me, okay, what is your photo? Why you have this photo? Then I can explain to them. And they will understand this. Okay, this is NFT. This is the value of the cryptocurrency. If you ask me to explain what is Solana, what is Polkadot to them, they will stop listening after 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? So this is a great way about doing adoption. So everything we have to do right now, if we want our business to become big, industry has to become big, then we have to do more adoption. Besides Bitcoin, it's NFT. So NFTs still have a lot of value, right?
But there's a lot of NFTs out there.
Yes,
so what's
so
special about Luca Nets that made you invest in his company?
Absolutely.
You bought the equity, right?
I bought the equity. And I buy some.
Some Pudgy also.
Pudgy also. If you check my Telegram, you know, it's Bored Ape and Pudgy. So I think two things. First, it's already they are top 10 at the time. They are already top 10. So NFT is super bear market, but they are actually, you know, already famous. Yeah. And they have a lot of traffic, actually. If you check about how many people talk about Pudgy Penguins, it's way more than Azuki, right? It's somewhere close to probably Bored Ape. So they have a lot of followers on Instagram, which is amazing. And the other things I believe in Luca and the team is, you know, I think this guy can know exactly about how to build in community, how to make things work.
Yeah.
I don't know the Yuga Labs guy, maybe they can do it as well, but I think Luca is an amazing guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's this project that raised so much money, but there's not much behind it. Whereas you have this dude, 24, 25 years old, who is working 24/7.
Yeah.
And like you start to see the results now. It's really impressive.
Yeah. I know more about probably the Azuki community. I don't think the guy can make things work. I just have a feeling. I mean, at that time. So actually on a lot of Azuki, but I see it very quickly. So I think, you know, but no offense, but I just think, you know, it's different level. Luca can make things way better than the Azuki guy. It's actually proved right now, at least for now, right?
Yeah. And if it's approved now in a bear market, imagine a bull market, how crazy things will go.
Yeah. Peggy Penguin should be top three in the bull market next time.
How high do you think it goes in ETH?
In bull market, it could be 100, but that's probably too optimistic, but I guess it will go way higher than the price right now.
What's your framework for investing in early stage crypto projects?
Actually, that's a very good question. At this stage, we're trying to avoid investing to too many early stage, because that was also a mistake we made in the last bull market, because we feel like we invest into too many projects. It's super hard to manage more than 100 portfolios. You basically cannot, you know, catch all the update of the portfolio. Then they will complain about why you don't care about us. It's actually not we don't care about you, but we just have too many portfolios.
We're too spread out.
Yeah, we have actually, at the peak, we have probably three people who manage on the post-investment side, but still not enough. So I think that was a big mistake. Instead of being too diversified, I want to be more focused and supporting the mainstream ones.
What's the optimal portfolio size in terms of number of projects?
I think somewhere between 50 to 80 is probably the maximum.
Okay.
But, you know.
That's a lot already.
That's already a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
But already, I think that's the maximum you can do. It cannot be more than 100. I think that makes no sense. Yeah, we can still fix that because some of our portfolio already become too big, like Solana, Polkadot. You know, we just talked to them, but they don't need our hands-on kind of communication to help them. Mm. They are already multi-billion dollars of valuation. And some of the projects, to be honest, already dead, right? They don't have, they lack of funding. They go out of business. So there are only a bunch of them. We still need to manage that, but we'll be more careful about making new investment. So our ticket size for the new investment is more like a middle to later stage deals, invest somewhere between 1 to 5 million to that.
1 to 5 million, less.
Yeah, wow. It could be less, but unless it's a super good deal, otherwise we will probably stick to that.
What are some of your biggest fuck-ups in the last 9 years in crypto?
Yeah, I think it's about just bad decision, right? If you're holding Solana, it could be worth 500 mil or whatever at a peak, right? That's, if you're calculating that way, that's a big fuck up, right? Why should I listen to people? Actually, the other story I told you is, you know, a few, but it's not bad thing, but I talked to a few, because I invest into Amber Group.
Yes.
The market making firm. Actually, a few co-founders, I talked to them a lot about, you know, what do you think of the market back to 2020. They told me, because it's a huge unlock, you should hedge your risk. You should short Solana on a second market. You know, using Binance to short Solana and de-risk a little bit. but which is a fair probably suggestion at that time, but you know, if you check what happening later, it's totally the wrong decisions.
What do you think about Solana now?
I think it would be a very hard time for them. I mean, the technology is good, but if you check about the industry right now, it will be super competitive, right? You are basically trying to solve the scalability issue of Ether, but Ether already have so many layer twos which can potentially solve the problem. Mm-hmm. So where's your edge? There's no pure innovation in your ecosystem, right? A lot of projects actually leave your ecosystem. So it's very risky. And also you have new competitor coming into place, Aptos, Swiss, Linari, all these move language protocol trying to solve the same thing. So you will be super competitive. How could you regain all this momentum you have in 2021st. It's a tough, you know, I'm not saying they cannot make achievement, but I think it would be very, very tough for them.
How was 2022 for you?
It was a bad year for me. It was a worse year for everyone else, I guess.
You have a few stories to share.
Yeah, absolutely.
And both on like financial kind of losses and problems, but also how it affected your mental health, because at the end of the day, you're a human with a mental health and we're all tied to that, right? And you even told me, I think, that you had tickets to go to the World Cup in Qatar and you're not even going because of, I don't remember what was it, FTX or USDC, I don't remember what was it, but like how taxing this crypto lifestyle can be and kind of fuck up your mental health.
Yeah, sure. So actually about Genesis, this is tough. First, it's a tough year for everyone because so many businesses go bankrupt. You know, people have money in FTX, in Genesis, Voyager, all these kind of platforms. So we actually have 9 figure of money at Genesis and 8 figure of money at BlockFi at first because I de-risk my position again. I mean, at the peak of the 2021st, which is the right move. I have a lot of cash on my hand. I think I just want to, you know, I see what happens in 2017. Mm-hmm. I know this is going to be a bad year. So, I mean, the market cannot always go up. So I did risk a little bit in 2021, which was the right decision. So I'm holding a lot of cash on my balance sheet, both in the bank and stable coins. But on the same time, I think, okay, so I'm holding mono cash. Should I probably get some stable yield on these kind of stable coin, which make perfect sense, right? DeFi is very risky because I think all these kind of story about hacks. So I think I probably just use banks. But bank is super complicated, right? You sign these deals, you know, it's just complicated. We do have banks, but complicated. I still have most of money in stable coins. Mm. So I'm lending a lot of money to Genesis and BlockFi.
So you're 100 million plus to Genesis?
More than that. Way more than that, actually. Yeah. And then BlockFi, but in May, actually, 2022, it's happened in Luna, right? Yeah. The collapse of Luna happens. It's pretty bad for everyone. I realized, okay, this is very risky.
So do you own some UST?
No, I don't own UST. Because I don't familiar with the Luna and its ecosystem, okay. So I didn't invest a lot in them. But that affects the whole industry, right?
Yes.
So I pull my actual money back, actually from Genesis and BlockFi. And their Sierra go bankrupt, Luna go bankrupt, which is the right decision. And afterward, I think things is more stabilized. I didn't use BlockFi. I think at that time they were already into trouble, but FTX tried to solve them, right? Mm-hmm. I used Genesis. Again, I think, okay, I still need to make some return, right? Mm-hmm. So I use Genesis again. I think it's stable and everything is fixed. I'm lending them some asset, right? But it turns out in November, after FTX things happened, no one expect that. Mm-hmm. Actually, no one expect that. And then because our contracts is fixed terms, we cannot pull back from mm-hmm. Genesis. So DFG actually getting money stacking into Genesis. It's okay.
So the key learning is never do fixed term contract in crypto.
It is. The lesson I learned, you know, for this thing is, you know, first I do actually sell it better than other people who have so many leverage. But I still have lesson to learn in this club. I think one thing is, since I already in an industry which have super high risks, mm-hmm. right? You're asking for crazy return but super high risk. Why are you trying to do something for small returns but super high risk? Mm-hmm. Right? It doesn't make any sense. If you want to stabilize your asset, make it less risk, just pulling your money into banks and other assets like real estate, whatever, mm-hmm. then you get away of crypto. If you're in crypto, you are seeking for high return, then you take high risk. That's the logic.
So forget the yield part.
Forget the yield part.
Look at the capital gain, because the yield is too much risk for what it
absolutely
for the return.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It just doesn't work.
It was always kind of Raoul Powell's view on that. He was always saying, like, I don't really understand where this yield comes from, and it's too much risk for this yield, so I'm just going to focus on the capital gains.
Right. That's right. So, you know, UST, I think the same story. You know, 20% seems, you know, a lot, mm-hmm. right? So, but if you talk about crypto industry, why are you taking all the risk with 20% a year? Mm-hmm. Right? You are seeking for 5x, then it probably was it, but 20% a year, that mm. doesn't worth it. And it collapsed anyway, right? Why not just taking more risky bet, right? Mm. So I think one story I learned and I would never do is trying to make some small returns in the crypto industry. Mm. Either I make big return, take high risk, or I just never do it. And I think DFG has somewhere around like 38 million dollars in Genesis, which is fine for our business, but still pretty bad, right? You're still losing money, right?
You could definitely do something with that money.
Yeah, you can.
Right now.
And it's in a bear market, you can buy a lot of Bitcoin Ether, right?
Yeah.
So we actually think about it. It's actually right at the right time of the FIFA World Cup. So I'm a crazy big soccer fan.
Yeah.
So I tried to book the ticket to Qatar, but this happens. And this happens, I think, as you say, I'm still human, right? I mean, it's still fine to our business, but I'm losing money. I'm still losing money, right? So I can still sleep, but I'm not in the mood just to watch the soccer game, have so much fun. So I just, you know, stop buying this ticket and just getting a little bit relaxing and thinking, based in Singapore and see what is the next move, what is the next risk, what I can do to improve, prepare for the next bull market.
What do you do when you lose tens of millions of dollars like that? What's the first thing you do? You say, I'm not going to go have fun because I don't really allow myself to go watch a football game. But what do you concretely do?
First thing, I would try to fix it, right? I talk to Genesis, talk to DCG, talk to other creditors, and our team actually doing a very good job on that. So we try to fix it and see what's the situation, what's the, you know, because nobody knows everything at that time, right? So we figure out everything, and that could spending a lot of time on your daily-to-daily work. We know this they go bankruptcy in January, right? And then everything, it's standard bankruptcy process. You just, you know, follow the process. Then we actually, you know, we still manage that, but we actually, you know, for myself, actually spending more time on other things, because it's a standard process, you know.
Yeah, you can't do anything anyway.
Yeah, just, right.
Let's focus on the future, because dwelling on the past is not productive.
Right. That's the thing.
Let's learn from the mistakes and do better in the future.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about, you know, it's super bear market. We have all the bad story about FTX, Genesis, and Three Arrows, Voyager, all these kind of crazy things. What can be worse? And, analyze a little bit. This year and the next year could be the best year for probably us to do investment. So I, going back to the industry, talking to project and see what's new there.
You moved to Singapore?
When I moved to that? Singapore in 2020 first.
Why did you move to Singapore?
Oh, that was the clear, obvious reason is because mainland China is not super supportive for crypto.
Do you want to develop on that?
I don't think I know details about why they come out as conclusion, but that's the result we cannot change. So I have to go.
There is actually not only crypto people from China who move to Singapore.
Yeah,
there's a lot of Chinese businessmen who move to Singapore.
Absolutely.
What's so special about Singapore for very successful Chinese business people?
Because they can speak Mandarin. A lot of people can speak Mandarin here. And, for me, it doesn't matter whether, you know, I stay in Singapore or Dubai. But for my parents, for my family, it's important because they are moving here. So I have to be with them, so I stay in Singapore. And the policy here is super friendly. It's a great country, super, super clean, super nice. So I just think it makes perfect sense for me to stay here.
What are the biggest similarities and differences between China and Singapore?
It's totally different. China is a big country like US, right? So you have a lot of things taken into consideration on the policy side. And they're, you know, Singapore is a small, clean country, which is very modern. And it's actually just a financial center, right? So you don't have much business going on here. It's more about capital here. So very, very different. Actually, but Singapore is suitable for crypto people and for other businessmen to stay here. It's very clean, safe. It's basically heaven for them.
Do you want to give an example of Singapore safety, and how it compares to other places you've lived in China or in New York?
Singapore is the safest place in the world, I would say. China is okay, but there's a lot of policy risks in China. US is, I guess, it's unsafe in a lot of places, right? New York is fine. Spending 1.5 years there is fine, but US, you would never know, right? What happened next.
So you would never live there? You would never grow a family there?
I don't think I will grow a family there. So I think this is a great place for us to live.
Do you have plans on growing a family?
Not for now. Yeah.
Focused on the business?
I think I'm focused on business. I'm dating people, but not for now. Yeah.
Not something too serious?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm serious, but...
I mean, not looking at the next big steps in life.
Yeah, not recently. Not recently about getting married or whatever. Yeah.
How does crypto impact your relationships? Because it's consuming 24/7.
It is. I usually sleep very late, 3, 4 a.m. maybe.
That's a classic crypto
I don't have morning. So.
I mean, to fast, just say I fast in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
I eat only in the afternoon for the first time of the day.
Yeah, afternoon tea is my first meal.
You're doing intermittent fasting.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's healthy for the long term, but
definitely not.
Yeah, I have two reasons. I mean, first is about crypto. I take late night phone call. The second about soccer, I'm a crazy big soccer fan. I need to watch every game, so that's also another reason.
What's your favorite team?
My favorite team is Man United. But
Manchester United. Okay.
But they are so bad in the past 10 years.
Why? So when did you start supporting them?
When I was probably 7 or 8. At that time, they are super good.
Who was the big player back then? Because often you start to like a team because you like a player.
Yes and no, but I think they play like a team. I still remember in 2008, right? 2008, yes, they're the champion of Europe. So that was
that's a long time ago.
That's long time ago.
That's a long time ago.
15 years ago.
You still remember the date because it's so special and rare.
Yeah, that's right. It never happens.
Never.
After Sir Alex Ferguson retired, we're just never the champion of England, never the champion of Europe. We play so bad. It's actually very tough for every time for I watch a game. You know? It's just you cannot fix
it. You like pain. That's why you're in crypto and that's why you are my new supporter. You love the pain.
Sometimes it's the same. Double curious.
What's one thing that entrepreneurs must have to succeed?
It depends on whether you are an investor or you are you start a project. It's different. It's totally different.
What's something that you look for in an entrepreneur to say, I'm gonna bet on you?
I think someone like you mentioned, Luca. It's somewhat our definitely, you know, all the business are super risky, right? But you know, the founder have to be, you know, the other story is the project we actually invest a lot. We never sell the token, it's called R-Star. The founder is Sota, a young Japanese guy. And I think this guy needs to be very passionate, insist and believe in what he's doing. And good at making things work. This is the most important thing, right? So Luca and Sota, both guys are super young, younger than me, but they know exactly about how to make things work. And they are so passionate and insist on the same thing. Just like what happened to R-Star. You know, the Polkadot ecosystem, actually a lot of projects, I mean, most of project goes down, but R-Star's developed pretty well. They can find an angle, insist on what they are doing, find an angle, finding what's going to be important to them and make it work.
What's something that people who want to become entrepreneurs need to know?
Of course, entrepreneurs need to be super, you know, it's actually different than the normal people. Normal people, you can always change. You will always, you know, you can back off. But entrepreneur, you cannot. You need to move forward whatever happens. And you will take so many pressures. Right. If you really want to make things work, it's so many pressure. Your lack of fundings, your meeting of, you know, you cannot get customers, the product is not good enough. It's just so many pressure on you. All the things can bring to fail. Only if you make everything work, then you have the big trend of the market is on your side, then you can succeed.
What's the one challenge that an entrepreneur will face? The biggest one.
Biggest one. I think how to survive winter is the thing, right? Especially in crypto.
In crypto.
Yeah. Most of the entrepreneurs just don't have the ability to survive in the winter. Because unless you are doing super good, nobody will invest you.
So it's managing your cash flow.
Yeah.
In the bad times.
Everybody do that. Some of the VC also stop making investment because they don't have enough capital to invest. We are lucky because we deal risk. We still have capital to invest. But I'm super cautious in the bear market because I have so many options and selection. Why should I invest into, right?
How do you test out before investing that the entrepreneur is actually good at managing cash flow and is more likely than others to survive?
I think more about, you know, let's say if you're able to raise money in a bear market, that's already a proof you can do anything, right? You can do well in the bull market because more people will invest into you.
Mm.
So it's already give you confidence about how, you know, you can succeed. About managing cash flow, it's actually a tough question. I think unless you have good experience, then it's very risky. But these things, I think, could be solved because you can always talk to the founder and communicating with them about how to manage your cash flow. Right? If they are in the wrong track, you can fix that.
What's something that you believe in that most people would not agree with?
I think crypto itself, most people won't agree with.
Right now.
Right now, right?
It's why do you think it's the case? It's so crazy to me that we're in 2023,
mm-hmm.
and no one gives a fuck anymore. Again, and it's just happening all the time, and you're just thinking people should learn.
Yeah, but I think it's all about whether you gain profit or not. If you gain profit, you will be supportive. If you are losing money, you won't be supportive. It's just that easy. Most of people are losing a lot of money because they buy crypto in super late stage in 2022, which is a big mistake, and they don't give a fuck about crypto in 2023 in the bear market.
So when would you tell people to buy crypto? Obviously now. And when would you people to stop buying crypto for the next cycle? To not get wrecked again and get into this cycle of like basically buying at the wrong time.
Yeah, I think as an investor, it's important to create a mentality about, you know, view things in the correct way, right? It's not about, you know, crypto is hot right now, we need to buy it. That's everyone's thinking we can get some profit. It's not that easy, right? You know, if you really want to gain some profit and you need liquidity, you need other people to buy your token, right, later on.
Mm.
That's the logic, right? If nobody is buying it, then it's not a successful investment. So you need to building the things in the long term. Instead of think about what's happened next, you need to think about what happened next and what happened next. It's more about like two steps forward instead of one step forward.
How do you think about that?
Hard, but you need to think about it. You know, let's say, just imagine, right? Everyone talk about layer two, right? Talk about layer two. Yes, there could be the solution for Ethereum and for probably potentially the whole industry on the scalability issues. But you need to think about what's happened next. Is it going to be one layer two dominating the whole market or be three competing with each other? Or like right now, probably 30 famous layer two competing with each other. Then you get a solution. For myself, my answer to this is it won't be 20 or 30 layer two survive eventually. It won't be only probably three or four layer twos. Then if you want to invest in layer two right now, you have to be super selective and careful, which I don't do because I don't know which one will be the winner and the valuation is high. So I didn't invest into a lot of layer two protocols. And then the next step is what's going to be, we have all the infrastructure layer two. Let's say layer two, we have probably 3-4 become successful and they certainly solve the scalability issue. What is the next? If we have a bull market, you know, first, I mean, we have the ETF, all these kind of mainstream capital flowing to the place. That's one thing that's important. And the Federal Reserve changed their policy. That's the overall environment, right? We can think about it. That's okay. But what happened internally? What's going to be the next mainstream, you know, adoptions aside from ETF, the mainstream capital flowing into the place? What happened? Then I will feel DeFi still have value, NFTs still have value, will have value next. Then think about all these kind of applications which can do mainstream adoption, which people can use in the future. Then you select the good one to invest. I think DeFi is important right now.
I wanted to ask, what are the things that you think are really important but are still not too complex, or there are not too many flavors of them that you're maximizing your chances to do good as an investment in the next 2 years?
I think two things are deeply undervalued. The first is the L-Layer 1 protocol. Because in the last bull market, all the narrative is about solving the scalability issue of Ethereum didn't have, right? So they have Solana's Avalanche, all these kind of other. What's going to be the next narrative, right? Is that going to be Ethereum only plus layer two dominant compared market? There's no other chain exist, or there could be a lot of other layer one protocol exist. And what's the reason why they exist and why they're important, right? I feel like the other layer one protocol is still very important. That's why we also make a lot of bet on the other layer one protocol. It's not simply about because the technology reasons. It's more about whether you can be localized and do adoptions. Just imagine the we invest in the Sharding in India's Sida chain recently. They are doing pretty well about doing adoption. R-Star in Japan, with OSS in Japan. There are so many layer one protocol invest which can do pretty good adoption in a certain localized market than the mainstream protocols. That's important because you have the edge about doing that. It doesn't say you have a better technology, but you're just moving quicker in these jurisdictions, then you have value. People actually underestimate the power of this a lot. They only care about, okay, right now it's a bear market. I need to be safe. I need to follow. I mean, to be honest with you, 90% of the VC in this market don't have any thesis. They don't have any investment thesis. If A16Z is invested, if Binance invests, I will follow. That's their thesis.
Yeah, that's their thesis. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why people care about layer twos. You know, Paradigm is a certain fund, right? A16 care about Ether. Everyone invests into Ether, right? Not investing into layer two. I'm not saying it's a good, bad investment, but if you think about deeply, have your own thesis, you may see the value of the others, especially for myself. I see the value of layer one protocols.
Mm.
So I, you know, that's one thing I think which is very important. The other is, you know, we have all the infrastructure, right? Where's the application? If you want to do adoption, you have to bring more users into the place. Then you cannot say we have all the infrastructure, but nobody using it, right? You have to have all these applications which customer and the user directly using it. I mean, DeFi is one thing, it's solid, people need it with all the clap of the centralized financial service like, you know, FTX, you know, Genesis, all these kind of things, right? DeFi still have a lot of value. And the others will have values. SocialFi, all others will have value. It's important to think about what is the next generation of the adoptions. Luca, Pajipanwan is also one example. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's good. They can bring a lot of people, probably, I don't know, 1 million, 2 million, 3 million people into the crypto.
Mm-hmm. What's the key takeaway from today's podcast?
It's actually good for this podcast because I, you know, when I was alone, I didn't think about the whole history of my investment career. It helped me a lot about shared experience about also myself rethink about it. What's wrong there? What's right there? How can I do better in the future?
What are you most proud of?
I mean, it's more about being brave and more in thinking independently. Because if I'm not brave enough, or I'm not independent enough, why should I take all that risk about investing to crypto?
That's extremely interesting. And in crypto itself, that's a key learning. You need to have your own thesis. Because at the end of the day, as you said, most VCs and most people don't even know really what they're doing. So if you're following people, like, it's very risky for you. Whereas if you have your own thesis, you are actually much more likely to do well. Because you have your own thesis, your own conviction, and obviously be open that things could take the, you know, wrong turn or change, but be independent in your thinking. And I think in general, the investing game is something that you do pretty much alone.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at, it's even Chamath Palihapitiya from Social Capital, he was talking about the kind of fallout with his co-founders. And the reason for that, he was saying, it's because at the end of the day, investing is a very personal decision. And if you have your, you have your, you have your gut feeling and your own experience, and at the end of the day you want to be able to make the final call, the same as if you are CEO of a company. This is the way, because this is my vision, and so at the end of the day it's a very personal thing, which sometimes can feel very lonely because people don't really understand you when you're doing your own thing, but you take your own responsibility for your successes and for your failures, and it's something I learned also in the last couple of years.
Agree, I totally agree. Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Where can people connect with you?
Oh, sure. So you can connect me on my Telegram. It's called @realjamesvo. And same on Twitter, you can DM me as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much for doing that, man.
Thank you.